Five might have been my favorite out of all. What about you?
Why was five your favorite?
It was kind of the accumulation of a lot of things that we needed to know, and then it showed us a whole lot of things about the future, I think, and I don't know. I really liked number five. What about you?
Does it make you want to go camping on the Creole Nature Trail?
Absolutely not.
Should be like the Creepole Nature Trail.
It definitely does not make me want to do that. Hey, I was going to ask you, back in, I think, episode 3, and this is kind of off topic and, you know, whatever, but when Cole goes in to Dora Lang's mother's house, remember that? And she's sitting there and everything, and he sees the photograph of Dora Lang with these men around her on horses with masks on. Do you remember?
Yep.
Do you think that was a vision?
No, that was a photograph.
Yeah, but I didn't know. I mean, it kind of showed, when I went back and watched it again, because it seemed kind of off to me, it showed Cole looking at it, and there wasn't anything to indicate it was a vision, but I don't know. It just kind of made me wonder because it was such an odd thing. Anyway.
No, that's crazy. It was real.
Okay.
So I should give a better introduction than we did. This is the 5th episode of True Detective on March 12th. So we already know the ending, but we're plowing ahead through the rest of these episodes. And yeah, we're kind of seeing some stuff in a different light. Did you have any different perspective of this episode now that you know the whole story?
I think when you go back and watch it again after you've seen the whole thing, yeah, it really does. There's several things that relate back to this episode in particular. Some of the things that in the last episode is said, and to Cole particularly, but yeah, I think this one kind of, this is definitely the tie-in for me. It ties in the first episodes and then the end episodes. What did you think?
Well, I think I saw some of the things the same way, and then some things looked a little different. Like one thing that seemed the same was the very first scene when we see Cole and Ginger at the bar.
Right.
I mean, I remember thinking, like, how the hell are they together at a bar having a beer after Cole just dragged him through a gunfight, kicking his butt and pushing him through where he wanted him to go? Ginger, like, accusing him of, like, hey, man, what the hell are you doing? And then, like, you know, 6 hours later, they're sitting at a bar having a beer.
Well, yeah, but then you find out why, that it's all just a setup.
Well, I know it's always been a setup, but Ginger should be like, screw you, man. I'm not getting in any vehicle with you going anywhere. You know, you're a liar. You turned your back on me. You're a traitor.
Well, he is. But see, Cole has told him that he wasn't going to prosecute him for what happened. He knows now that Cole is a detective and that Cole has the power to put him away. And it's kind of like a deal they've made with each other, even though it doesn't really seem very dilly the way Cole has him duct taped up everywhere they go.
Yeah, but Ginger saw Cole do a bunch of stuff that he shouldn't have done in the housing project.
Maybe, but that's Ginger's word against Cole's word, so to speak. I kind of got the feeling, because remember when he was taking him out of the project and he had him in the back of the car and he said, I don't want you, I want Ledoux. And Ginger couldn't believe it. And Ginger's like, yeah, right, or whatever.
Yeah, I get it.
Cole smacks him in the head.
I get it. That's the story. That's the premise in the story. I just don't believe it. I don't believe Ginger would be that cooperative. You know, if I were Ginger, I'd be like, well, screw you, man. Come after me then. You know, you're going to put your own career on the line. Come after me.
Well, I really... Right, but Ginger doesn't know. You have to remember that Ginger doesn't know that Cole did this off the record. He didn't know any of this stuff. For all he knows, everybody's in on this setup. How would he know?
Yeah, I know, but Cole had a lot more to lose than Ginger. Ginger's just a loser biker, dude.
Well, right. And I don't know that Ginger would have flipped that easily either. I completely get what you're saying, but I think that's the premise of the story, is that Ginger has... In a self-preservation mode, has agreed to go along with it against his will.
So everybody knows this. So what do you think happened to Ginger? We never see him again.
I think Cole lets him go. I think he goes back to his life of crime. What do you think?
Well, he tells Marty that he's laying in a ditch, tied up in a ditch.
Right. I think that's just where he dropped him off.
I don't know. He never went back for Ginger. I guess they just left it open. I guess it doesn't really matter, but it's kind of a curiosity.
I wouldn't think that he hurt Ginger. I didn't get the point that he did that, because he could have done that at any point after he got the other guy, when he was following the guy from the bar.
He looked so tied up and so duct taped that it looked like it would have taken some effort to undo the way he was tied up. I don't know. Maybe he did. Maybe it's not a big deal.
I don't know. I never thought about it any differently.
So Cole tries to make the deal with DeWall, but DeWall sees through it somehow and doesn't want to have anything to do with Cole.
Yeah, wonder why. Wonder what he saw. I mean, he's saying those things to him like, you know, there's a shadow on you and acid in his eyes, a demon or whatever. I mean, wonder what that was all about.
Yeah, it added to the whole mystery of like, okay, this guy's tapped into this Yellow King, and is he the Yellow King? Is he somehow, you know, ultra-sensory, and he has all these extra powers to see people? But yeah, he says he has a corrosive soul with shadows around his eyes. Pretty creepy.
That's a creepy thing to say. Yeah, like acid.
So, Marty, the plan, I guess, is no matter what happens, Marty's supposed to follow DeWall, and he does. And we see the Creole Nature Trail sign. Which we see later in the series, too, but that's this whole environment is the Creole Nature Trail. And then we go back to the interview with the police, and G&P ask how they got onto Ledoux.
Yeah, right, and Cole's telling them that it was just a confidential informant's tip and that he had to come back from visiting his dad and all that. They're completely, it flashes back and forth between Cole and Marty, and they're completely sticking to the story, the same one that they've told, I guess, internal investigations or whoever would investigate after a shooting goes on in a situation like that. They've stuck to the story, and Marty even goes on to say that the story hasn't changed for 17 years because it's the same story. It's the true story.
So, but Cole and G&P have kind of a Mexican standoff about information, like just to kind of see who will go first.
Mm-hmm.
How did you interpret that at the time? Do you remember?
I know that Cole wanted to see the file, the newer file of the dead girl, and they were, you know, they were saying, "Well, no, you tell us what you know." And I just, the only way I interpreted it was that at the time was that you can tell more and more that they're trying to get something on Cole, and that's when it really started to feel heavier to me. Like they were kind of pushing Cole to try to find some information out from him.
Yeah, they were revealing more of what they knew. Like, we know that this happened and that wasn't true and this was this way. And so you might as well admit that, you know, you're the guilty person.
Yeah, right.
So, they connect back in time. They connect back up to where DeWall hides his truck, and Cole wants Marty to call it in, or Marty wants to call it in, I guess, first. Marty wants to call in, and Cole says, "We don't want to do that."
Right. And that was a little I can see why that would be viewed as a little suspicious.
How did you like Marty's Pink Floyd shirt?
Well, I mean, Pink Floyd. How can you go wrong, really?
Yeah, so they're jumping back and forth pretty rapidly between the interview with the detectives and with the actual crime scene or the actual evidence, exploring evidence at the crime scene.
Well, right, and the guys are telling, both the guys separately, Cole and Marty, are telling what they say happened, and then they're actually flashing back to what did happen and how different it was from what they said.
Yeah, they're pretty good at lying. They're really effective at lying. If you didn't know the other story, you'd totally believe Cole and Marty.
Well, you're right. I mean, because this is, 17 years later, and they're telling the exact same thing.
So they had a pretty good hideout, DeWall and Reggie. They had a pretty good one-way only in to their hideout. You know, they had pretty
trip mines. I mean, trip wires with mines and all sorts of pokey things sticking out to catch you. I mean, they had every way to catch anybody coming back in there. Not only that, but that little one plank bridge to get over the little creek area. I mean, it was definitely back in the woods.
Right. So I thought it was pretty cool that they flanked it. They didn't just follow the path right up to the buildings. They kind of jogged off to the side to check out the scene a little bit closer.
Well, and they point out there, too, that Cole's father taught him to bow hunt, and he learned to track through that, because the van that was pulled up to the area was covered in, like, a camouflage netting and everything, and so they're going back through there, and they're like, belly crawling and really learning to track, or not learning, but really showing that Cole knows how to track something. I don't think Marty would have found that, do you?
Cole kind of makes fun of Marty, like, I'm not talking about sitting in a deer stand waiting for something to come after bait. I'm talking about tracking.
Right.
I don't remember them crawling too much, so I guess they hunkered down a little bit behind the weeds.
No, they were belly crawling. They were doing that kind of combat crawl, you know, when they were going up to the compound area or whatever, the main trailer with the outbuildings and everything.
Yeah. So now Cole tells Marty to go back and call it in. That was a little bit odd that one wanted to call in first and then the other one wanted to call in.
Right. And I think it was probably a good little way back, don't you?
But I'm not too far.
Well, I don't know. But I felt like, I don't know, I was actually going to ask you the same question. Why do you think Cole did that? Do you think he wanted to keep Marty's hands clean? Or why do you think?
I think it was kind of a mystery that the creators threw in there to make it seem a little bit more difficult to understand.
And to kind of lay a little bit more guilt-looking thing on Cole, if we were trying to find guilt in Cole or mistrust, I think that would help us to find that. It would me, certainly.
Yeah. So they continue their lives to G&P and they, you know, talk about the shootout and even to the point of how the bullets were carrying everywhere. And one thing I'd noticed on this rewatch was that they have the same guns. They had the same guns back then as they have today.
That's such a guy thing to notice.
Like Cole has the Glock and Marty has the .38 revolver, which seems like not a very smart weapon to have. I guess it is. I guess a lot of law people like it. Like, you know, Rick Grimes has his revolver, but I'd rather have a gun with more bullets and, you know, kind of semi-automatic.
I'll just have to take your word on that. That's such a, I don't know.
So we see Reggie pop out of the somewhere in the trailer, out of the side of the trailer, whatever room of the trailer, in his towel. But he still looks dirty. Where do you think he was coming from?
It looked like he was coming from the shower, but his hair wasn't wet. But he had a towel on. So, I don't know.
Yeah, it was creepy. Like, he could have been coming from something not so good.
Right.
And then he had some interesting tattoos. 666, and he had swastika symbols and a noose and some sort of a praying figure that a lot of people on Reddit were interpreting as, like, that was Cole's face at the time.
Ooh, that's awful.
But, you know, those are all kind of false herrings. And then, of course, he had the swirl on his back.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and he's saying all the creepy things. Marty gets him cuffed.
Yeah.
And he's saying all these creepy, creepy things.
Yeah, I've seen you before and all that stuff.
Yeah, and he says that he calls Cole the Carcosa now. Did you hear that?
You're the Carcosa or you're in Carcosa?
I thought he said, you're the Carcosa now. And I looked up Carcosa. Carcosa was evidently some kind of ancient city that was only seen in hindsight in a book. But later, the term come to mean stranger, is what I gathered.
Yeah, I always thought it was a place.
Yeah, that's what they said. It was like an ancient city in some book, but then it started being used as, you know, as stranger. So I don't know. I was curious as to his saying the word and what it meant. I don't know.
So another thing I caught on the rewatch is that Marty and Cole later, we'll see Cole later, but now we see Marty is talking to an 8-person review team. He's not just talking to G&P and lying to them. He's lying to some sort of police board.
Yeah, that's what I was. That's what I had kind of mentioned earlier. I wonder if that was some kind of an internal investigation. I think whenever police officers fire their weapons, and I mean, I'm completely talking out of turn, but isn't there some kind of an internal investigation or something, some kind of board that they have to go through when something like that happens sometimes?
Yeah, like internal affairs or something.
Right. That's kind of what I took that to be, because it wasn't just Marty doing it. Cole did it too.
Yeah, and that was back then, not in the future GNP time.
Right.
So Cole asked Reggie back in the back in the past, Cole asked Reggie why the antlers.
Yeah.
So yeah. He was still investigating. He was still curious about the motive more than just catching the guy and putting cuffs on him.
Yeah, but this guy was crazy. I mean, nothing that came out of his mouth even sounded rational in any way.
Right.
I mean, it was like scary, and not just scary, but calmly scary. And he had almost like the smile behind his voice and in his demeanor. And he's cuffed in a towel on his knees on the ground outside, and he just, you know, he doesn't care, and he's just saying this stuff. So
then Cole sees DeWall, and for not the last time, he says, "Freeze, motherfucker," and the guy doesn't listen to what he says. You know, we see this happen later in this series, but he kind of takes off or ducks back behind his line of sight for a shot.
Well, yeah, and he starts hollering for Marty, and Marty has gone to check out some of the outbuildings that are on this property. And Marty's really engrossed in what he's doing, rightfully so, and Cole is trying to let him know while he's standing watch over Ledoux out there with his handcuffs on that, you know, that DeWall's out there as well.
Yeah, and Reggie keeps spouting his symbolic words. And
yeah, I know, and Cole calls him Nietzsche.
Nietzsche, shut the fuck up. Yeah. So Marty finds stuff that he doesn't like in the back. He opens the truck door, and he sees the boy and the girl in there.
Yeah, but they don't show you that yet. They just show you, he just opens it.
Right.
And then he's got like this look of horror on his face, and he comes stomping out, and he just shoots Ledoux right in the head.
Right.
And Cole's just kind of standing there. And of course, when DeWall sees him shoot Ledoux, DeWall's like, I'm out of here. Right?
Do you remember when you saw what happened to DeWall? Do you remember what you first thought happened to him?
To Ledoux?
To DeWall.
Oh, you mean when he takes off running?
Yeah.
Well, I thought they had shot him, but evidently he hit one of his trip mines, right?
Yeah, because he blew up. He didn't just get shot. He kind of blew up. I first thought that Cole shot him and hit something on him that blew him up, like a grenade or something.
Yeah, I didn't know. I just, you know, I knew that it was bad. I didn't know what he was shooting him with. I'm not a gun person as far as that kind of thing goes, and I didn't know. But, yeah, I thought he had hit him, but it looked pretty violent, what him going down.
So. He was a victim of the cracker-ass security.
Yeah.
So Cole then says, we have to make this look right, and takes steps to make that happen.
And Marty's completely, he's just stunned. And see, we've learned back, I think it was episode 1 or maybe 2, that we learned that Marty's never shot anyone. Because remember the kids said that when they were asking Cole if he had ever shot anyone?
Yeah, the daughters, right.
Right. And so we've learned Marty's never shot anyone. And then Marty came out and did that. And he's just freaking out. And Cole says he's kind of proud of him. He says he's glad he finally took a stand or something.
So Cole goes and finds the kids. He finds the reason Marty was so upset. So what do you think the gig was, now that you know the whole story, Michelle? Why were there kids there? Were they like the prize? Were they like the bonus prize for Reggie and DeWall for helping the bigger gang get what they wanted?
I don't know. I kind of thought the kids were just were the the do-all, end-all of everything. They were what everybody wanted. They were the reciprocals of the abuse, and they were the eventual sacrifices and everything.
But yeah, but not like Dora Kelly Lang wasn't. She was a woman, and Rhiannon Olivier was a woman. You know, young women, but they weren't children and they weren't boys. They were women. You know, there was some sort of a difference that I had to try to interpret.
Well, they weren't, but they were disposables in society. A lot of these children who were disposable, and these young adults were disposable, and a lot of them were the children that had been seen, or adults that had been seen when they were children.
So you think the criminals just wanted humans? They didn't care if they were a boy, a girl, or a woman, or young?
I don't think they cared at all. I mean, I think they were obviously going after the younger, particularly in this situation, but there was more girls that we were privy to than boys, but...
And there was rape, so it was, you know, I don't know, that was mysterious to me, still is. Like, why did those guys get those kids as a prize when, you know, I know the older Klansmen type guys in the Mardi Gras outfits, like, were raping that girl, but they also raped older women, you know, older females, you know, not very old, but older adult females. That was a little nebulous to me. I wondered, you know, kind of wondered what was their motive behind it.
Yeah, I just know that so much of it had to do with the schools and the schools shutting down and the kids that were going to those schools and the abuse that had happened and stuff. So I just assumed that it was something specifically about the children. Maybe to some of them. I don't know.
So now Cole's at the 8-person police panel, and they commend him for the great job he did in catching Reggie and DeWall back in the past.
Oh yeah,
they're we flash back, and they're carrying out the boy and the girl.
Yeah, the boy is he's been missing since January, is what they say, and they're not telling the month. Do we know the month here?
What month it is then that they find them?
When they're carrying him out, because they say that he's been missing since January. We know it's hot. They're in short sleeves and shirtless. The guys were shirtless there and stuff. So we know it's hot. It's lush. There's a lot of greenery and stuff. It's not winter time, I wouldn't think. But I didn't know if we knew the month that it was going on. But the boy had been missing since January. But see, here the girl had still not even been reported missing.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if that matters too much. I mean, it could be hot and humid in Louisiana in February.
Yeah, you're right. But how would you feel? They said the boy had been dead for one day. How would you, or less than one day, and he'd been missing since January. And we assume January is at least a month ago, right? Because they're not going to say since January if it's still January. So how would you feel if you walked in and found that child who'd been missing for that length of time and you missed it by a day?
I don't know. Maybe he was lucky, because look what happened to the girl, you know, years later when Cole went and visited her.
Yeah. I don't know.
Kelly, we found out the girl's name is Kelly, or I don't know if I knew that from the future episode or from that episode, but she's Kelly. Don't really ever know the boy's name. So Cole smashes his beer can and goes into his time as a flat circle theory with the G&P guys. And then Marty somehow slips in, and he's talking about how things got pretty good for a while. And we see Marty roller skating, and he's taking counseling, and he's, you know, kind of with the kids and Maggie again.
Right.
What'd you think about that when you saw it?
Well, you know, Maggie was saying that he had a long way to go, but you could tell she was softening up to it. And Marty was saying how maybe it was him getting shot at that softened her up or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, because do you think that Marty coming close to dying was something important to Maggie? Like it opened her eyes to like maybe I could lose this guy forever. So I'll give it another shot.
Yeah, I think maybe. And I think maybe she was thinking about her daughters and her daughter's father. And I don't know. I mean, I think it would. Plus, he was really trying at this point. And she asks him there if there was anybody else. Remember, she asked him if there was any other females. And he says, no, there wasn't.
Yeah. And that seems less important to me, though. I remember in Breaking Bad, Marie made a comment to Skyler that maybe facing death changes a man. And Skyler kind of reflected on it because Walt had that cancer. And I think it was during the time Hank got hurt really bad. And, you know, Marie's husband, Hank. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe facing death changes a man. And it made me think, like, maybe Maggie and Hart, as she was reviewing Hart's experience, like maybe she thought it might change him.
Well, I think she always wanted the relationship that she had with Marty. I think she wanted it. I think it wasn't disposable to her. It was disposable to him. I think even in the end, even when we get to the 8th episode and a lot of that stuff happens, I think we still see that she wanted a relationship with him. He's the one that just completely and consistently screwed that up.
Yeah, I thought the word, were there others, were there any others, was kind of an open invitation. Like, if you answer this right, I'll give you a chance.
I think so too.
And then he answered it correctly. No matter where the truth was.
Then he said that he was begging her and he would go to his grave begging for another chance.
Right.
And she sees him out there and he's holding the kid's hand and skating. He's being the father she wants him to be. And she's always wanted him to be. I mean, they're at a skating rink, for goodness sake. And she feels like she's getting what she wanted in him, at least for that.
So we see that she sets up Cole, too, with a date. And a date that turns into somebody that Cole gets pretty close with.
Mm-hmm.
And that girl's like a total alpha doctor. What did you think of Cole's girlfriend?
They didn't show her a lot. Even though she evidently had an important role, it was just a little bit showing her.
It said really a lot, though. Even in the short time we saw her, it said a lot about Cole. Because she was like, she knew how to manipulate Cole and to make him, like, happy. It was almost like a sexual reference. But then they also showed her, like, they're watching TV and she's working the remote control.
Right.
She was the alpha one in that relationship. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, because Cole is such an alpha guy to begin with. And then to see him with that female, it was an interesting thing to watch, their interaction. It was teeny tiny in the scope of things, but it was interesting.
So then we get a slight tease of the girls back in the day with that crown. Just mm-hmm. a little slight short tease, but it kind of flips back and forth to it. So mm-hmm. what'd you think about that crown scene? There's only one crown, one little princess tiara, and the girls are kind of fighting over it.
Yeah, I think they were definitely trying to make a point with that, particularly as you see the episode progress. What did you think?
Well, I don't know what I remember thinking, but I remember reading about the interpretation. You know, from all these things where people tried to figure this all out to the nth degree. But one of the theories was that Audrey was trying to protect Macy by stealing the crown and not letting her be the queen, you know, or the object of the Yellow King. She steals the crown and wears it a little bit and then throws it up into the tree.
Yeah, I didn't get that. I completely get what you're saying by saying that, but I didn't. That's not what I got at all. I just saw little girls fighting over a crown. I've got three daughters. I was, you know, fighting over the crown.
Another wacky theory back around that time was Reggie Ledoux's name. Like, Reggie is kind of regent, kind of like kingly name, regent or Reggie, and Ledoux the second king. So he's not really the Yellow King. He might have been a subordinate to the real Yellow King.
I bet you could come up with any.
I didn't come up with it. I read it.
No, it's right.
Like King number two, Reggie Ledoux, the second.
But this is what I'm saying. Can you imagine if you could to like take one scene and just like, I don't know.
I think those clues were planted though, for people to either follow or falsely follow. Because they can make names, any name they want for these people, but they pick certain names. So
right.
the crown stays up in the tree for years, even until kind of that 2002 time frame when the girls come home as older daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Macy in her cheerleader outfit and Audrey in her, I guess, goth truck with all her pals and beer cans falling out as she gets out.
Well, and right, and Marty, he's talking with GMP, and he's talking about these years that have passed and how good the years were. And he says, you know the good years when you're in them, or you just wait until you get sick and then you realize the good years came and went. Because there's a feeling sometimes like life slipped through your fingers, like your future's behind you, like your future's always been behind you. And he's talking like that to him, and you can tell that he's really, Marty starts really being more introspective of stuff as he's having this conversation with GMP. He goes into the, I thought something he said was so good. It was one of my favorite things that Marty said. He was talking about the solution to his whole life was that woman and those kids. And of course, talking about Maggie and his daughters. And he said, and he was watching everything else. And then he goes on to say that infidelity is one kind of sin, but his true failure was inattention.
Right.
And I just thought that was so much. I think that was showing a little bit over the course of years as how Marty had taken on some of Cole's, philosophies, maybe. It just seemed really deep for somebody like Marty to be saying that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he had more power of observation in his rearview mirror than he did at the time, for sure.
Perfect, yeah.
So I remember seeing the scene with Marty and the daughters and Maggie and Goth Audrey, and Goth Audrey's like, women don't have to look like you want them to, and Maggie's just kind of smiling it in, like she's like, now you get to see, it's not just me, it's like women, you know, you're seeing women now. And Marty looked really outnumbered by the femaleness of that scene with Maggie and the two daughters, and Maggie's just kind of smiling like, you know, you're outnumbered here, Marty.
So what did you think of that?
I also remember I interpreted Maggie just on the second watch, like Maggie looked more beautiful than ever in any of the other times. She looked the most beautiful in this, maybe because she looked happier or she looked like content, but she looked really good in this, in this 2002 time set.
I thought so too. But I thought her smiling and going along with that kind of sassy behavior that she had against her father, I don't know, I wasn't fond of that. I didn't think that was a great way to be. I thought that was kind of enabling to Audrey.
I liked it. I thought it was Audrey growing up and kind of stretching her wings out and seeing, you know, getting her own sense of power and freedom, separation.
I suppose, but I mean, as we find out, you know, if you give these kids at this young age that much sense of power and freedom and, oh, you're okay, honey, do whatever you want to do, we see what she ends up doing.
What could go wrong?
Right. Right. I mean, you know.
So what happened?
Well, she ends up in a car with a 19-year-old and a 20-year-old, and evidently the police find her parking, and she's in various states of undress with these, not one guy at 16, which is, you know, but with two guys, and they call her dad to come get her.
Right.
And, of course, he's like any father would be. How would a father be going to pick up his daughter like that?
Right. And Marty, you know, in the midst of all this bringing her home and dealing with her and Maggie, he gets back to his I can do anything I want because I'm a cop mode.
I don't think that's ever really left. Do you?
Well, and is reminiscing of it, it is a little bit. Like, I didn't observe what I should have seen. I kind of didn't see the signs I should have seen. But not at the time. At the time, he goes right back into cop mode.
Oh, I think he's always been in cop mode. I think he's been in cop mode. I just think that he was so happy and content for those years from what they're showing us that he kind of let a lot of that stuff slide. And then there comes a point that you hit a brick wall with that. And I think Marty hit his wall when the daughter did that.
So after that scene, we see Cole with G&P. And he's going more and more into his wacky fourth dimension where time doesn't exist and people watch us from afar from this fourth dimension and they see us in a flat circle even though we see ourselves in a sphere. Mm-hmm. And he sets up the beer can man, or men, one of the beer can men, as if he was the fourth dimension person, like controlling these, like a puppeteer almost. And I don't know. He made those beer can men look like the humans, like the us in his theory. You know, that we're just subjects of a greater power observing and controlling what we do.
Well, yeah, and then he went on to say that we just had our existence again and again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everything that we've done, we have to live through this again and again and again. No wonder he felt so miserable with the life he had led, and that's what he, you know, thought. You're reborn, but you're reborn into the same life. He says you're trapped.
Right.
I don't know. That was harsh.
Yeah, so that's kind of the playing the name game. It's like, in eternity, death needs time to grow all the things it's going to kill. And we're reborn, nothing changes, you can't remember your lives, and that is the terrible secret fate of all life, which is the title of the episode. So you don't believe that? You don't believe we're reincarnated to redo everything we've already done, and we can't remember it, and we're just kind of in these circles?
What do you believe?
I asked you first.
That's not what my religion teaches, so.
Yeah, I don't have a religion, but I think we have one life and we live it, and that's kind of what makes it precious, is that we only have one life, and it's, you know, it's kind of like in the movie 300 where the guy throws a curse on the other guy and he says, "May you live forever." That's like the worst thing you could do is live forever. You know, the best thing is to have one life and to realize you have one chance and to make the most of it.
I guess, but then why do you see these people who are 70 years old and doing everything they can to do stem cell research and buy more time? You know, when somebody tells you that you're dying of something, you're not thinking, well, geez, it's been a good ride for the most part. You're trying to think of how you can extend that life. I don't know.
I don't blame people for wanting to extend their lives. You know, it's your one shot, it's your one chance, so make the most of it. But I don't like when people think, "Oh, I can just go away and die now and be happy because I'm going to go and be in this happy place with all my relatives." And I don't really believe there's an afterlife. So I don't know. I think trying to make the most out of what time you have now is the best philosophy for me anyway. Right.
I absolutely believe in an afterlife, so you and I just definitely have differences.
Well, you've refuted the terrible secret fate of all life, then.
Well, sometimes you got to do that.
Yeah, I definitely don't believe that we're reincarnated as different things. And, you know, first of all, I don't think we come back in the human form to repeat what we've already done. But I don't also believe that I don't think we come back as other animals or other beings and live those other types of lives either. I think we have one shot and this is it.
And then when you're dead, it's just nothing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think about when I'm dead, I think about when I'm alive.
Okay.
So
I think also that we need to point out that during this whole time that Marty's living his life and he's got his little girls and there's all this happiness and everything, that they're also showing Cole. And Cole is really focusing and becoming a master manipulator, getting people to confess the things that they've done. Well, show him time and again. Sorry.
He's a master manipulator of everyone but his wife or his girlfriend who works the remote control.
Well.
But yeah, other agencies are calling him in to, like, you know, be the superstar interrogator to find out things they can't find out.
That remote control thing really messed you up, didn't it? What, do you think the guy should have the remote control?
Is absolutely.
Why?
Because girls don't know how to work it.
Okay, you're going to edit that out, right?
Well, you guys don't know how to work it properly anyway.
Okay. Okay.
So, Cole is called in to do different interrogations. Try to get back on track here. And one of the guys he gets called in on is this pharmacist murdering guy that they need help in interrogating. I guess it's Guy Leonard Francis. And Cole works his magic on him and gets him to unwittingly tell what he knows. And then I guess it's a confession until Cole kind of blows it by wrestling and fighting him and slapping him and stuff.
Well, right, because the guy comes up with this stuff and starts saying he wants to make a deal because he knows stuff about the Yellow King.
Right. So what do you think about that? That was kind of another invitation into, like, come on, people, what do you think about this greater theory of all this mysterious Yellow King and big people? He says GLF, Guy Leonard Francis, says he met the killer and the big people know about him. Who did you think the big people were?
Well, I don't know. I don't know at this point. And I still don't know, honestly. I don't know. But I know that he says that they didn't get the right guy, the main guy or whatever.
Right.
They obviously got somebody that had something to do with it because that was everywhere that they were on Ledoux's plantation compound thing. But
I think it's pretty clear. I think it's the task force people and the, you know, Edwin Tuttle's cousin and maybe Tuttle himself, the governor. It's somebody bigger than Reggie Ledoux and DeWall Ledoux. I think it's somebody. We all kind of know that the case is bigger than just these whacked out meth cookers.
So, yeah, well, right, because he wouldn't have known the things that he knows. He wouldn't have known to even say things like about the Yellow King or whatever. I thought this made Cole look really bad. Because he told Cole, he said, I know you, which looked bad, even though we, you know, find out that that's not the case. But he said, I know you, and I know about the girl that you were researching, the antlers, whatever he was talking about, and he goes into the Yellow King thing.
Wait, who says who said I know you to Cole?
The guy that he was interrogating, what was his name?
Guy Leonard Francis?
Yes. Yes, he said, I know you, and
I don't remember him saying that. I remember Reggie saying that.
He said, I know you, or I know who you are. He said one or the other, and as I recall it, I hope I'm not recalling it wrong.
Well, he knew him from the police, the articles about him being the detective in the case.
Well, that's what Cole said to him, but that's not what he said. And because Cole said, well, you could have found out any of this from all of the articles that were out. But the guy is panicked and he's trying to save his neck at this point. And that's not what it sounded like. Not to me. It didn't sound like that. It sounded like he was saying, I know you. I know the stuff that went on. Not accusatory necessarily toward Cole, but not necessarily not accusatory toward him either. I thought that was the most... If you're looking at Cole, I thought that was the most damning piece of evidence when he said that.
I saw it totally differently. I saw it as him having his chance. Like, I know you. You're the detective interested in the Yellow King, and I know all about this Yellow King. So,
but why would he have started choking him and smacking him and stuff?
Because he was mad. He was like, you just read that somewhere, and you're using it now that you're in trouble. Like, you didn't offer it right up. You didn't offer it right away. You offer it only now that I've caught you and tripped you up with your words.
Well, who would offer it for no reason?
Well, he made Cole mad. And even the next day, so a night passes, and the next morning, Cole's like, I got to get right back to this guy, Leonard Francis, to Marty. Like, I'm not ruling out any other agencies, like other cop agencies being involved. The task force is in on it.
Right.
And that's where they find out the guy kills himself.
Right. Well, Cole thinks that the whole thing is a conspiracy, like you said, and he asked Marty about the task force at that point. And he definitely thinks it had something to do with the task force. And Marty is thinking, what's he thinking?
So what do you think happened to the guy? What do you think happened to Guy Leonard Francis? Like, why did he kill himself? Who told him to kill himself?
I don't know who did that. It had to have been. And who would do that? Who would kill themselves like that? You know, he's in his jail cell, and they're reviewing the tape of this. So we see everything, and he gets called out. They find the payphone.
Right, we saw it all. We all saw it.
Right.
So I think somebody threatened him with something greater than being locked up for life and said, if you don't kill yourself, this worst pain will happen to you or your family or something. And I think it was somebody involved in those agencies, some big cop or some big politician who just said, I'll make other people connected to you have living hell unless you kill yourself.
Yeah, well, it had to have been some kind of threat against somebody, because this guy's already going away for murder.
Right.
So
we find out Tuttle, the guy, not the governor, but the cousin of the governor, the guy who came in to their office, died in 2010.
Right.
And the GNP are really suspicious of Cole because he died right after he showed back up in Louisiana.
Right.
And we see Cole driving around, and he goes past the Stacy Gerhardt billboard again of the "Who Do You Know Who Killed Me?" And Stacy Gerhardt, we find out—I don't know if I found out then or tonight or back whenever—but she was in Rihanna Olivier's class picture, that photo they had in the yearbook.
Oh, I didn't know that. I don't think I saw that.
So she was a classmate of Rihanna Olivier, the girl who died in the flood.
Well, and the girl who they said died in the flood.
Right,
yeah.
Right. But right. So Cole revisits the Dora Lange site, the murder site where she was posed with the antlers.
Right. There's that odd wreath thing there.
Yeah, that was totally, more people thought, okay, he's trying to look for, clues that he needed to cover up that he forgot the first time. I knew that Cole wasn't the murderer at that point.
I never thought Cole was the murderer, but I think they were kind of pointing fingers just to make us suspicious, is how I felt. I never felt like Cole did it.
Yeah. So then he sees the computer where all the files that were kind of reversed to look like they were made in error.
Right.
And they were all girls like 70 pounds, 90 pounds, 75 pounds, 110 pounds. They're like little girls. So they, they weren't quite adults. They were like these school age girls, like the Rhiannon and the other girl. They were like school age girls and not women.
Okay, I didn't notice. I didn't get that. I actually stopped it on that to look at it, but I didn't get that. So
that's they make it, they make it pretty clear it's children. And so then G and P kind of spill more of their words with Cole, and they just tell him they know he's lying. Come on, confess. We know you're lying. And that was just such hackery. I think those guys were just really made to be kind of bad cops.
Yeah, I don't really know what they expected out of him at that point. I mean, they've been talking to him for hours and hours, and they've got to know that he's not going to just, if he were guilty, come clean with stuff because they start bullying him.
Yeah, they show him some pictures of the Lake Charles crime scene. And they kind of say they know he has a storage shed. And
okay, but that was interesting, though. Didn't you think, because they showed him the pictures with him in it? And that
That didn't make me feel any guilt towards Cole at all.
No, but it was another point toward him, is all. I mean, because he's sitting here saying, show me this, and I don't know what you have. And he's acting really innocent on everything this whole time that he's known about this this present case that's going on. And then they find out, I mean, they don't find out, they've known the whole time that there's pictures of him actually there five different times, I think they said.
Yeah, but he was just investigating. He wasn't, like, stalking or...
Right, but he's not an investigator.
Yeah,
he's
but that's was kind of the story. The story was that he was, you know, he was fed up, he quit, he left, and then he came back to because he couldn't live with the crime remaining unsolved.
Yeah, but we don't know that there.
I thought that, though, back then.
Well, that's because you're smart. I didn't...
Did you ever think that Marty, did GNP ever convince Marty that Cole might be guilty?
I don't think they did at all. Although, I think when they started asking him those questions about, did you ever think that he was manipulating the whole scene and he told you to do this and he made this look like this and he, you know, he could have made that phone call and all this kind of stuff and then led you there. I think that was about the closest that they got, but I don't think Marty ever bought that. Do you? Did you feel like he did?
No, Marty was protecting Cole, protecting their secret.
Right.
And as we know, they both kind of knew that this was unresolved. Mm-hmm. And they both had to come back and fix it. So this episode kind of ends with Cole visiting the school again, the closed school, and he sees all the figurines and he sees the paintings on the wall of the see no evil, speak no evil, hear no evil little mm-hmm. angels. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know if you noticed it, but there was a scene where there was a lens flare that touched Cole's shoulder and then swept across his forehead and then disappeared. It was like a yellow orb, like a yellow lens flare. And, you know, if they had that happen in a show, if they didn't, you know, if it was a mistake, they'd just edit it out or reshoot it. So they made this creepy little yellow ghosty lens flare appear on Cole like it was touching him.
I didn't notice that. I did know, I mean, not specifically. I did notice that as he's walking through this old broken down school that there's different areas of light shining on him, and it's creepy to me, but I didn't notice that specifically.
And then as the camera pulls away and the episode ends, Cole is in the frame of a window with stars on the broken glass. Mm-hmm. As if he's literally being framed. The camera pulls out through the window and it shows like the jungle or the Carcosa looking jungle with the black stars around Cole as he's framed in this shot. So it's almost a literal piece of evidence, like, okay, Cole's getting framed here by everybody.
Oh, that's interesting. Is that yours, that framed thing? Because I had actually made a note that they, you know, pan backward through a dirty window and he's standing there and he's holding up one of those little stick figure things into the sunlight. And
yeah, he's literally perfectly framed in the window frame.
I didn't think about it in those terms. That's interesting. Yeah.
So are these podcasts harder to do now, Michelle, now that you know what happened through the whole end of the story?
A little bit. I think they're a little bit harder. Are they for you?
Yeah, it's a little bit less fun knowing all the details of what happened.
Oh, I know. I didn't want to say that, but that's how I feel too. I want to not know. I want it, you know, not to be all out in the open. But there's still things I want to know, even though it's over too. So I guess I shouldn't say that.
Yeah.
But we'll never know.
Well, life goes on even beyond True Detective Season 1.
I know. It has to, I guess.
All right. So that's all I got. You got anything else for Episode 5 of Season 1?
It's faded out. I'm done with Episode 5.
All right. That's it for me, too. Then I'll see you next time.
Okay, Mike.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. It's your life, and you can do what you want. What you like, but please don't keep me waiting.
Do what you like.